Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual with our Saturday afternoon show on a beautiful day for baseball in Chicago. And the Cubs, as you know, are playing a doubleheader at Wrigley Field. The White Sox are playing a single game, and they'll be at Oakland, and that game will be on this afternoon at 3:30. There's racing this afternoon at Arlington Park. And then at my favorite park, Sportsman's Park, there's racing tonight. So for your racing fans, there's a lot going on, and in baseball, there's a lot going on. Speaking of baseball, our guest today is Ernie Carroll, who I'm sure you heard me refer to many times in the 40 years that I broadcast the White Sox games, because he was the majordomo, the host, in what we call the Bard's Room, which was the dining room at White Sox Park, and he did a great job and made many friends, and I made him famous because he made the world's greatest chili. So we'll find out about his background at Sox Park, and it dates back to the days of the old Roman. He'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. Ernie Carroll is our guest today at Northwest Federal. He made a lot of friends during his years at White Sox Park, and Abner Doubleday and I started out on the South Side, but we didn't. We were preceded by Ernie Carroll and some other people like the old Roman, Mr. Comiskey, and Ernie was part of it all. What year did you come to Sox Park?
1921, on March the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, the old Roman brought me from Milwaukee, St. Benedict's Boarding School.
How did he find you there?
Well, I was going to school there, and the priest told me that he couldn't carry me no longer without my tuition. Well, my mother and father couldn't pay the tuition, so he was coming through, and I served Mass that morning. And he come back to Chicago with Mr. Comiskey, Charles A. Comiskey, the old Roman.
The old Roman.
Yeah.
That's really a great story.
So I come there. It was March 17, 1921.
And what did you start doing in those days? Was the Bard's Room there?
Well, the Bard's Room was there for his private club that called the Woodland Bards. And I started there in the concession. And then after I started in the concession and got through there, I had to go to the press box to take sandwich to the newspaper men and coffee or Coca-Colas or something like that to drink, because they didn't have it up in the press room at that time.
Well, when did you start where your main concern was down cooking in the barge room?
Well, after the old Roman turned the barge room over to the newspaper men. That's after he had passed, and J.L. Comiskey, that is his son, the old Roman's son, was J.L. Comiskey. Yeah. And so he told me to go up there and fix sandwiches for the ball players and then for the newspaper writers at that time. And so that's how they got to come up in the barge room, because I had to take it up in a basket to the press box.
What do you remember about the old Roman? What kind of a guy was he?
Well, I didn't have much dealing with old Roman at that time, because he had his own club up there. The Woodland Bards was not many living at that time. So he didn't live about a year and a half after he brought me from St. Benedict's Boarding School. And then I took over. Lou Comiskey told me, his son, told me to take over the bars room and the concession downstairs for the press. And I want you to take care of them. That's all you had to do. Would take care of the press and ball players.
I was trying to remember whether or not you made those long trips to Pasadena.
No, I didn't, because I had to go to school and work at the ballpark. Because Mr. Comiskey, J.L., we call him J.L. at that time, for him to pick me up so I could go to school, and then after I went to school, I had to go to the ballpark. The ball game started 3 o'clock. In the afternoon, and I was going to St. Elizabeth's Grammar School at that time, and he used to pick me up so he'd get me at the ballpark.
Yeah, the ball games were at 3 o'clock, then 2:30, then 2 o'clock, then 1:30, and they finally settled at that time.
Settled at 1:30, yes.
Well, A lot of people felt that the 3 o'clock starting time was good because a fella could do a half a day's work in his office and leave at 2:45 and get to the ballpark and see a ball game. That's what brought that on. But then I guess during the Judge Landis years, they decided, no, they wanted to get back, and they put it back at 1:30, which is a good time. It's worked out good.
Well, the bankers downtown, they used to close early, and so they had to work late, and that's how they got they used to play the ball game at 3 o'clock in the evening. So they put it back to 12:30 and 1:30 for the ball game to start. That's how it happened to be so early. And they used to come out there, all the bankers and the other people in the stocks and bonds downtown, they used to want to come to the ball game and go get home early. Uh-huh. Because they lived further out in the suburbs at that time.
What kind of contact did you have with some of the great name ball players in the early days?
Well, like the Babe Ruth and...
Did Babe Ruth come up and eat with you?
No, I had to take Babe lunch up to the clubhouse because there was too many people around there would get around him, and he used to couldn't eat his lunch at the time for autographs. So I had to take it up to the clubhouse. I made sandwich for all the ball players and put it in the basket and went to the clubhouse and with the Coca-Colas and orange pop. That's what they have at the ballpark at that time, orange and Coca-Cola.
Did you ever realize when you met Babe Ruth that he was going to turn out to be one of the two great ball players of all time? The other was Ty Cobb.
Well, no, I didn't have no idea about the ball players at that time or who was to be the great. They were all great to me. But to the fans, that they got up and hit a home run and double plays and that, well, they come out for them to see him at that time.
Well, now in the late years when you were at the ballpark, you served the players as well as the writers and announcers in the barge room?
No, not in the barge room. I served the writers in the barge room. The ball players, they eat in the clubhouse. I had two helpers up there. I used to fix the sandwich and the cokes and stuff to send it up there so they could eat when they come in or eat after the ball game. We had ham and corned beef sandwiches.
What about Mr. Comiskey's friends, the bars? Did they eat up there?
No, they ate at the barge room, yeah, but I had to fix their lunch early so I could take care of the ball players and other people, fans downstairs for the hot corned beef and hot ham sandwiches. Yes, at that time.
Well, these years out at Sox Park have been great years. The place is pretty much the same, and things really haven't changed a great deal, have they?
No, they haven't. Vec like a lot of companies, so they go through the same rigmarole we've been going through for many, many years. Because Vec liked to play cards and sit around and talk to his friends.
Yeah, Vec is a terrific guy. If you can't like Bill Vec, you can't like anybody. He's really a likable person.
Yeah, he's a great showman.
Yeah. What about the other Comiskeys when they came on the scene? What about Mrs. Comiskey?
Well, they had a private room for Mrs. Comiskey and her lady friends. And after she had passed, and Chucky took over with his... The young bunch of, they all had private room for the card playing. They loved to play cards, the Comiskeys did. Uh-huh. Yes. Until they met you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I cured Chuck. Dorothy Comiskey, who married John Rigney, a White Sox pitcher, she was a very nice person.
Very, very nice, yes. The whole Comiskey family and their husband there and the daughters, they were all nice. They had a private room up there for their friends, and I had a young man up there. I used to fix the lunch so they could go up there and wouldn't mingle with other people.
What about some of the ball players who were your favorites during the early days?
Well, all the ball players are my favorite. I treat them all right, all the same, because I didn't want no one to come back and say I had personal friends that I...
Were you at Sox Park during the scandal year?
No, I come after that. I come there in 1921.
But who was playing then?
Well, it's pretty hard for me to remember all that.
Give us a few.
Well, there was Radcliffe.
Yep, Radcliffe.
And Shires.
Art Shires.
And
remember the story about Shires?
Yes, I remember.
Who was manager then?
I can't remember right offhand, Bob. I wish you'd help me out and tell me. Lena Blackburn.
Lena Blackburn.
That's right.
You remember Shires and Blackburn had a big fight at Philadelphia, and they chased Shires. Shires chased them under the bed, and they finally had to get a couple of the hotel police guys up there to straighten it out. Shires was some kind of a character.
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he had Lena Blackburn, and he couldn't come home on the same train that he was riding the train at that time. And so Shires didn't have much money, and he didn't have much of an education. So they had to take up a collection from the hotel to send him back to Chicago. And that's when George Lander stepped in on the case. I can't remember what happened after the judge stepped in.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, been a long time. The Landis years were really something. I'm really happy to say Landis was one of my closest friends, and I really admired him. And boy, he took over baseball and ruled with an iron hand.
Yes, he did. The judge used to come out in early so he could watch the ball players, and he sat in the first row on the railing with his hand like this, and his head, his chin on his hand, looking out at the ball players. You would think he was asleep, but he was watching everything someone else did.
And he used to wear that old battered gray hat.
Well, that
looked like somebody had just kicked it all around the room, and then he put it on his head.
Well, that's the way he wore his hat, but there was new hats, because the kids used to come snatch it for him.
Oh, is that right?
That's right, during the baseball season. That's right.
Well, he was a wonderful man. Our guest today is Ernie Carroll, who is part of the White Sox scene for so many years and an old friend of mine. We'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. Our guest today at Northwest Federal is Ernie Carroll, who for many, many years was associated with the White Sox. He was the cook and maitre d' and host and everything else in the famous Barge Room. And the Barge Room got its name. Barge Room got its name from the fact that Lou Comiskey was part, or the old Roman was part of the Woodland Bards. That organization used to play cards up there all the time, and then they called the room the Barge Room. Is that it?
Yeah, that's how it started. The Woodland Bards Club was the old Roman, and after they all passed out, Lou Comiskey took it over and called it the Barge Room, because they could have it for the newspaper men and the other part of the press to come up there so they could have lunch before the ball game started. Because I used to fix their lunch and then had to take it upstairs to them in the press box.
What do you remember about the famous restaurant across the street called Ma McCurdy's?
Well, that's where all the visiting club used to go on the Ma McCurdy's. Babe Ruth and a lot of the old... Mr. Sholin had it when he used to come up there, help Mr. McCurdy to get the place started when he was at 39th Street. And he come in and fix that place up for her so she could take care of the other out-of-town newspaper men, because they wasn't allowed at that time up to mingle with the White Sox press and everything. They had to go over to Mr. McCurdy's until later on in years. Under Ben Johnson, he put a stop to that. They all had to be in the Sox ballpark for their lunch.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the way it was. At first, they wouldn't come up to mingle with the White Sox in their barge room, so Mrs. McCurdy had hers over there. So the Ben Johnson stopped it and told them to come there, and that's how they started having it in the barge room for the White Sox and the visiting club.
Well, you learn something new every day. I never realized that Ben Johnson had stepped into that picture.
He passed away about a month later, but he did fix it up for him to come in the ballpark. They didn't mingle with the home newspaper writers. The visiting writers used to go to McCurdy, so finally he says they'd be under one roof. So they put it, that's how they got the Woodland Barge. He had that club when he was an old Roman.
Yeah.
They called it the Woodland Barge Room, and after they all passed, then they started calling it the Barge Room.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And it's still known as the
Barge Room.
Yeah, and it's still a very nice place, and hospitality out there now under Bill Veeck is great. Anyway, it's a great spot. Well, you got some wonderful memories. Remember Willie Cam?
Willie Cam, yes, I remember Willie Cam.
Remember Bill Sissel?
Bill Sissel, yes.
Yeah.
Bill Sisson and Willie Cam, they were very good friends later on in years, but after Sissel got in a little trouble on the, I think it was Ben Johnson, he had passed, and his case wasn't in, and George Landis stepped in. And that's how Sissel got barred out of baseball. He went to the National League and got a lot of trouble. I won't say how, but he got in trouble. Yeah. And so that's where Sissel got out. He was a great ball player.
You remember Jackie Hayes?
Oh, yeah, sure, Jackie Hayes.
Wonderful guy.
Wonderful.
Yeah. What about Banana, Zeke Panura?
Zeke Panura. Well, Zeke was in a class by himself. Boy.
He was the world's greatest fielding first baseman because he never got to anything.
He waved at it quite a bit. He was a good waver with that glove.
You know, the last I heard of him, he's still in the banana business down in New Orleans.
Yes, he's married. He got a big family now. He's got about 8 kids. 8. Yeah.
Well, he was some kind of a guy.
Yes, he was. His father had a great fruit store in New Orleans. At the time. He used to make trip up quite a year, but after he got married, he don't come up anymore.
What managers do you remember the?
Well, when I first started, I come up with Kid Gleason, and then Johnny Evers. And after Johnny Evers had come...
Clarence Rowland?
Well, Clarence Rowland was the first one when I come up on it. Then they called him the Pants Rowland. He quit and went to be with the umpires. And then that's when Kid Gleason come in, when Clarence Rowland had.
Yeah. Well, those were some great years, weren't they?
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. I did. The years I put in there, I enjoyed it very, very much.
You were not there during the scandal.
No, I come after the scandal.
That was an unfortunate thing.
1921, March 17, the whole Roman brought me from St. Benedict's Boarding School. That's where I got the job there and been there for 50-some years or more.
Were you always doing the same thing? Were you always cooking, or were there other things that you had to do at the ballpark?
Well, that's all I had to do. Just at night, I had to clean up the barge room. And then I would go home because it took all day affair. Because they started out early in the morning playing cards and drinking the beer. They had a brewery right across the street to get the beer free. So they used to come up and play cards from noon until 7 o'clock at night.
You had to do all the cooking?
Well, but after Mrs. McCurdy didn't cook, I had to do the cooking. Yeah, well, I would love for her to cook because I didn't have much to clean up afterwards because we had to take the dishes back to her. Uh-huh. That's the way it was.
Well, what about some of the great players that you must have admired a lot that were members of the White Sox?
Well, I admire all of them, and the White Sox and all the visiting club. I admire all the ball players. I love them. Because after the game, they would come up, and I would like have some time to talk to them, to question and everything. Then early in the morning, I used to want to come to work, and I used to come, and I used to let the baby in the clubhouse so he could sleep. He wouldn't go to the hotel. He used to love to sleep in the clubhouse in the morning. See, the game didn't start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so he would come there and wait for me so he could sleep in the clubhouse.
They say the babe was quite a night hawk.
Well, I won't be the man that said this. Yes, he was quite a night hawk.
Well, he was a wonderful guy. You know, I saw him hit a home run in the first All-Star game. Remember in the lower deck in right field? And Charlie Gehringer was on board. And the American League won that game 2-0. I was so impressed by Ruth that I started to keep track of home runs that he hit in games that I broadcast. You know how many home runs I saw Babe Ruth hit?
How many?
72. And a couple of those balls are still going. There never was a home run hitter like him. There never was a drawing card like him. The greatest drawing card that ever lived.
I got a ball. Babe Ruth hit a ball in a park. It was a park back at the White Sox.
Parking lot.
No, it was a playground. It was, for the kids used to play in the park there. Babe Ruth hit one there on to second base. That was at 33rd Street. That's why they played, the kids used to play in there. And the kid come over there with that ball, and he says, the guy wouldn't let him in the press gate to come in. And I was standing at the Red Hot stand. I saw him over there talking, and I knew the kid from the neighborhood. So I went over there, and I asked him, what's wrong? He says, I got the ball that Babe Ruth hit. I said, I'll give you a dollar. And I gave him the dollar for the ball. I forgot to tell you, all these years, I still have that ball up in my trunk in the attic at my home. Yeah, I got that. And then the other kids around the neighborhood, when Babe come in town, we used to get all the balls that were old balls and wash them with milk. And then get the babe to sign them. See, the milk would take all the scars and roughness off of it and get them clean and white. And sell them for a dollar or else 75 cents. I used to give it to the kids out there. That's how they made money. In those days, that was a lot of money. A dollar or else 75 cents for those old baseball with the Babe Ruth on them.
And you use milk to clean the ball.
Yeah, use milk to clean the baseballs because that would take the roughness out of them and they could write smooth on them. And they used to get the Babe to sign them.
You remember anything about my favorite Lou Gehrig?
Well, no, Gary didn't hang around much. He just come in and he looked like he was always studying or reading a book or something. And I didn't have much contact with Gary.
Well, you got it. That's an odd description, but inadvertently you've hit it right on the head because that's really what he was. He was a very serious guy. I can remember talking with Lou Comiskey in the aisle back at third base one day. And we're talking to a girl who lived on the south side of Chicago. And Lou Gehrig came along. It was a couple hours before the game. He was in civilian clothes. And we introduced Gehrig to the girl, and they got married. And when President Nixon honored baseball on the occasion of its 100th anniversary, Mrs. Gehrig was standing right in front of me in the reception line with Mrs. Ruth, a wonderful lady, a girl from the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, well, she was a great friend of McCurdy's. Francis McCurdy.
That's right.
Because they come through the pass gate and had to come up on the third base side to get to their seat. And that's when the Babe, Lou Gehrig met her.
Yeah.
Right at that gate there.
Well, he was one of the greatest Yankees of them all.
He was a great man. Yeah. And very, very friendly.
Very friendly.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you became famous not only for your work with the White Sox, but as a famous chili cook.
You made me famous, very famous. And I used to hate you for that because I used to go out and had to have chili every day. People used to come by, why is Ernie's chili? I said, go see Elson.
No, that was really wonderful chili at that. And you used to serve it up in the press room every day.
Yes, that's right. You'd have it in the press box and, I mean, the press room, the barge room.
Yeah.
When you said a press room, I'm thinking about it. Press up in the upstairs. But they used to call that the Barge Room, B-A-R-D-S, the Woodland Barge. That was the name of the club, yeah.
Our guest today, and we're reminiscing about the past and baseball, is Ernie Carroll, who for 50 years was out at White Sox Park and made a lot of friends and did a great job. We'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. Our guest today at Northwest Federal is Ernie Carroll, who for 50 years was the major domo in the barge room at White Sox Park and also got the reputation for being the number one chef when it came to making chili. We got to have a chili party soon.
Well, whenever you want a chili party, just give me a couple of days and I'll be over and take care of it for you.
What, for the ladies listening, what's special about your chili? There's something special about the way it tastes. You make it different than other people?
No different. To my wife, I have no difference because she helped me quite a bit.
Well, can you tell us a little bit quickly about how you make it? What goes into it? Beans, what else?
Beans and a hamburger and chili. Put plenty of chili powder in it and make it hot if they want it and then have chili hot sauce on the side if you like it that way. But there's a lot of people don't like it real hot. You like yours real tasty, Bob.
Ernie, it's been great seeing you and having this chance to talk about the old days. We were both part of it and some of those happy days at Comiskey Park. And you made yourself a lot of friends, and everybody still loves you and admires you, and it's great to have you here today at Northwest Federal. Lots of luck to you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Ernie Carroll, for many, many years, 50 years, a major domo in the press room at Comiskey Park. He was really an important part of the scene. And now this is Bob Elson saying, have a happy day. We'll see you next Saturday at our usual time.